into kind of a eulogy I need to read. One of our great lights, one of the great luminaries of the Central American Solidarity Movement, died over the weekend in Los Angeles. Dan White is one of the co-founders of the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador. CISPES was one of the sponsors of a caravan to deliver material aid to the people of El Salvador in 1986, in which I was a driver. And I knew Don White through the Pacifica struggle. He was on the Pacifica National Board and on the board at Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, and a prolific, prolific activist. In fact, he really neglected his own health and maintenance to sacrifice himself, body and soul, to the issues that he was passionate about. So hats off to you, Don. We march in your footsteps. The reason I wanted to bring that up as a segue is because we wanted to launch into a discussion about trade, specifically fair trade versus free trade. But before we do that, I want to follow up on something that Dan gave us last week on his show. Dan read an editorial of sorts. It was an edited version of a speech given by Bill Cosby a couple of years ago before the NAACP. And basically, Cosby's point was that African Americans need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, that if you're African American and you are poor or out of work, it's your fault, according to Cosby, because you lack motivation, because you have failed to acquire the skills and the vision that will allow you to achieve greater heights in your financial well-being, etc. A lot of people perceive that as a bashing of African Americans, especially working class African Americans, and a lot of people agreed with it. Well, Dano got the ball rolling by reading that editorial last week. He supported what Cosby said. I was among those of us listeners who did not and wished that there was a way to respond. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have a way for listeners to call in and have their comments on the air. But that is a capacity that we are going to be working on here at WCRS. So since there isn't really an opportunity to respond that way, I thought I would give a rebuttal to Cosby's editorial, just a very brief one here. These are the comments of Professor Michael Eric Dyson, who in fact wrote an entire book based on Cosby's lecture called "Is Bill Cosby Right, or Has the Black Middle Class Lost Its Mind?" So let me just read a few paragraphs here from Michael Eric Dyson, and then I want to encourage you to contact the station if you have an opinion on this. The point here is to get discussion going and to get community feedback and input. And I'm not exactly sure what we'll do with that input right away, but we'll find a way to work it in. And believe me, your input is very valuable here. Michael Eric Dyson says of Bill Cosby's lecture that it's one thing to say that personal responsibility is crucial to African American survival. It's another to pretend that it is the only thing that matters. The confusion between the two positions is what makes Cosby's "Blame the Poor" tour so destructive. By convincing poor blacks that their lot in life is purely of their own making, Cosby draws on harsh conservative ideas that overlook the big social factors that continue to reinforce poverty: dramatic shifts in the economy, low wages, chronic unemployment, job and capital flight, downsizing, outsourcing, and the crumbling inner-city schools. None of these can be overcome by the good behavior of poor black folks. As historian Robin Kelly argues, all the self-help in the world will not eliminate poverty or create the number of good jobs needed to employ the African American community. Furthermore, Cosby's insistence that race has little to do with the circumstances of the black poor pleases right-wing pundits who believe this denial is a sign of mature black leadership. One of those stereotypes is that poor black people are lazy citizens who victim-monger while bemoaning the, quote, white man, unquote. Such a view is undercut by what we know about the black poor. Most of them work, and few are paralyzed by their astute perceptions of persistent racism. But Cosby's hell-bent on denying that race and structural forces play a role in the lives of the poor, apparently because his unsubstantiated fear is that these forces, if they're acknowledged, will cause the poor to lose their initiative, their desire to move ahead. The plane of black progress, Dyson says, lifts on the wings of personal responsibility and social justice. Cosby's trying to fly the plane with one wing, with such a philosophy, it's bound to crash and burn. So what do you think of that, WCRS listeners? Zach, what is the phone number that people need to call?
447-0296.
That's our engineer, Zach Hinkle. 447-0296. You can call the station and leave a comment here. You can contact us online at wcrsfm.org, wcrsfm.org. Let's get a discussion going here. I thought it was an interesting thing that Dan brought up, and I've offered you a little more food for thought. Let's see if we can get something rolling on this. How are you, Bruce?
Another mic. Oh, doing good, I guess. glad to be here, and really appreciate you having me on, Evan.
Sure, it's always great to have a fellow community activist to talk about issues of relevance here. We wanted to talk about the trade bill, especially brought up by Congressman or Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio. Do you know what that stands for? TRADE. Trade revision, something or other, but
not exactly. But I'm familiar with the bill somewhat.
Yeah, for you out there in the listening audience, you might not have heard very much about this. It has received very little coverage in the news. What this is basically is a bill that would overhaul U.S. trade policies in a number of significant ways. If you're a regular listener to WCRS and you've heard the Fair Trade Program, which is on Tuesdays. You'll know a little bit about what fair trade is about and how it is a contrast to the prevailing model of free trade, which has been, by most people's standards, very destructive throughout Central America, Africa, the Caribbean, parts of Asia, and here in the United States, resulting in job loss, loss of national sovereignty in a number of ways because it subjects trade laws and the country's each country's ability to enact tariffs and protections to an international body of adjudicators that has no accountability to the governments that are signatories to these trade agreements, such as the World Trade Organization. Sherrod Brown has proposed new legislation that would overhaul all of that and, for one thing, subject all trade agreements to congressional approval. The last few trade agreements were fast-tracked through the Congress, and Congress did not have an ability to debate them. And it would also require several steps of review and impose environmental standards and fair labor standards so that the impact of the resulting trade will be equitable and beneficial on both sides to any country that participates.
Well, the thing that I think hits home for most working folks, I'm a steel worker, spent 30 years in the mill up in Lorain and was a long-time activist with the union, chairman of the grievance committee up at Local 1104, is that, you know, while this so-called free trade model is just untouchable, and there are all kinds of protections written in for patents, profits. In fact, cities have been sued for having child protection for child labor and protecting themselves from polluted water because it's a so-called a detriment to free trade, and those that want to protect people's rights to protect their communities are called so-called protectionists. There are no protection, and the corporations howl to the high heavens when we say that there should be some protections for workers' rights to organize, safety, communities, and for our ability to protect ourselves. Really, I think it's that labor and my union, the steel workers and industrial union, has been kind of in the forefront of trying to build, reach out and build coalitions, relationships with environmentalists, with community activists, because our interests are the same. We want to protect people's rights. And I think the difference is when the corporations talk about this so-called fair trade model, it's always that we're protectionists if we try to protect people, and that we need to compete in the world market. Well, I think there's another model, and what we say is it's not a question of competing in the world market or the local market. What we ought to be talking about is developing a level playing field and bringing those least among us up so that we all have standards and we don't pit one against another in a race to the bottom. And I'm very thankful Sherrod was our congressman for years in Lorain. And one thing we always said about Sherrod is we didn't have to go to him for problems. You know, when there was a problem, he always came to us. And I think, again, in this regard, he's really leading the way. He's got the flag out in front of the whole legislative structure on this issue.
Well, of course, the steelworkers and other unions figured prominently in the WTO protests in Seattle in 1999, where some 50,000 people in a fairly amazing coalition of labor and environmentalists and citizen activists came together and effectively shut down the World Trade Organization meeting that weekend there in Seattle. And by the way, our departed Don White was one of the organizers of those protests. So that's another shout out to Don. The effect of shutting down that WTO summit was to prevent the passage of a number of trade agreements, which would have been particularly detrimental. But those have come up again in further trade agreements that have been passed since then in a variety of ways. One of them you mentioned, or you kind of touched on, I guess what would translate to intellectual property rights or such. There's a provision in the current version of the Central American trade agreement, which Costa Rica signed on to by a very slim margin last year. The Dominican Republic was among the first, and several countries such as Venezuela have outright rejected it. In which pharmaceutical companies who have the ability to produce generic drugs after the patents on the drug companies that develop those drugs have expired would have to undergo the same testing. They would have to do the whole testing regimen all over again, thus increasing the expense. So essentially, this trade agreement, the CAFTA as it's called, would deny access to life-saving pharmaceuticals to hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people throughout Central America at affordable prices. That's one of the things that's specifically addressed in Sherrod Brown's bill.
Well, I think it's just par for the course of what we're dealing with, and I think coming off the Seattle uprising, we're seeing quieter but much more important and long-range organizing going on. The Steelworkers Union that I'm a member of, in fact, has taken steps forming a new international union, joining with Amicus, a big union in Britain, and is working to develop the same integral union merger with IGT in Germany, the big metalworkers union, the Brazilian metalworkers and mine workers unions, and the South African miners union, and in order to have power on our side of the table to represent us. And I think when you mention Costa Rica, I think we have to say that just prior to that really forced vote, because U.S. corporations
and the contested
Bush administration, yeah, played a hell of a role in really coming in and threatening voters and threatening to withhold aid. There were huge demonstrations. And what's going on throughout Latin America and elsewhere is that there are new organizations taking place to counter those. That includes new forms of trade developing in Latin America. Before we get into the point on retiree security, I think one of the things that's not mentioned at all, hardly ever, is that this question of trade is integrally tied to this whole crisis over immigration. When the NAFTA fight took place, which Sherrod Brown was a leader in the fight against. One of the things that the opponents had said was that it would lead to a massive increase in immigration, because it allows U.S. corporations, which are backed by the government here, U.S. agricultural companies, to go in and actually wipe out entire industries in Latin America. That occurred, and now we have that level of massive immigration, and it will not be solved by putting up 10-foot fences, as Sirota said the other day at a at an appearance I saw. He said, what they've done is created a hell of a market for 11-foot ladders, you know, and you're not going to stop immigration. If people need to get someplace, any worker is going to go someplace to supply, to be able to live, and that's what's happening. And we need to find ways so that those workers who are, in many cases, most cases, the most pro-union of workers, to be able to organize so that the companies cannot come in and pit one against another.
Well, of course, the way that works is the way the trade agreements that are slanted in the U.S. favor work to undermine the economies of the participating nations in Central America is that it prohibits those countries from attaching tariffs to goods imported from the United States. And when those goods that are imported from the United States are subsidized by the federal government, they become more affordable or less expensive than those goods that are produced locally in those countries. So the local farmers, the local producers, are not able to compete with the U.S. producers, and thus they're driven under. The local economy is made subservient to the United States trade policies and to the United States producer cartels, who are really the ones who are behind these the free trade agenda. One quick little anecdote, Marilyn Welker, one of the co-founders of this radio station, and I were part of a group that lobbied Deborah Price one year against NAFTA before NAFTA was passed. And Deborah Price explained that she had other constituencies that she had to answer to, and I asked her if those were other voters who were speaking up in favor of NAFTA, and she said no, it was industry representatives. I mean, why would citizens speak up in favor of NAFTA? Anyway, this has also had an impact on wages. It's had a downward pressuring effect on U.S. wages and working conditions. And Bruce, you wanted to say a few words about retirement and how the economic impact has affected retirement.
Yeah, I think we're seeing what could be called a quiet depression, or maybe a sort of silent tsunami. Of just literally wiping out the entire structure of retirement security, which was so carefully put in place through long, tough struggles by unions and working folks. In my own case, I'm, as I said, I'd been 30 years at Lorraine Works, and we'd negotiated good pensions, and I expected to have a pension that was close to $3,000, not a giveaway, but a pension that we negotiated in tough struggles, and those monies were taken from other areas when we negotiated it, and so they were to be well funded. Well, just before I became eligible for my 30 years pension, or right at the time I became eligible, actually, the company called off a night turn, called in a day turn, and declared themselves a new company. Well, what's to take place when a company declares bankruptcy is that the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation, which was put in place by the ERISA Act in 1975, is supposed to step in, take over pensions, and pay those pensions and protect our living standards. Instead, the Bush administration replaced the head of that agency with a right-wing ideologue named Stephen Kendarian. He refused to recognize pensions. And in my own case, I just got a letter. Instead of having nearly $3,000 pension, which I could live on, when I moved here a few months ago to help my elderly parents, I now am supposed to live on $125 without health care. Now, I'm one of 3,000 steel workers that got hit that way, but it's not only steel workers. Auto workers, airline workers, others are seeing the same thing. And it's part of an overall international drive by corporations to force workers into 401ks and savings plans. In fact, the administration right now is pushing a plan that would actually wipe out the PBGC in the name of saving it, and instead place it in the hands of private insurance corporations. Well, the segue to this is that Sherrod Brown has taken a bull by the horns on this one, and is sponsoring legislation along with Senator Durbin, Dick Durbin out of Chicago, out of Illinois, to completely redo, reform the outdated, ridiculous bankruptcy laws in the United States. And the problems with those are that the bankruptcy laws in the United States, when a company declares bankruptcy, you go on a list to be paid back, and workers are at the bottom of those bottom of that list. Just across the border in Canada, when a company declares bankruptcy, they have to pay workers' pensions and health care first. And finally, so that we understand where we are with this, in the year 2000, there were 112,000 defined benefit real pension plans in the United States. In the year 2002, that had been reduced by corporate attacks to 31,000 pension plans, and today it's somewhere below 20,000 pension plans in existence. And that combined with attacks on Social Security, where, you know, even being beaten on their attempt to privatize it, there's now a slowly developing underfunding of Medicare and Social Security. And I would say that older folks, retirees, have to not sit home and cry in their beer. We are organizing, and people are not going to take it anymore. It's time to fight.
Well, and of course, privatization is another component of the whole free trade agenda. In fact, today is the anniversary of the independence of Mozambique, the African nation of Mozambique, from Portugal. And although Mozambique is now democratic and independent, it is also a signatory to the Africa Fair Trade or Africa Free Trade Deal, sponsored by the Clinton administration, which has caused the privatization of most of the state-owned businesses and public utilities in Mozambique. So, in a sense, their internal sovereignty, let alone their national sovereignty, is fast becoming subservient to international private interests. And it's those same private interests, of course, that are aligned against retirement, aligned against publicly funded health care, et cetera.
I think the important thing is that when we speak out and make ourselves known and get these kind of horror stories into the public domain and do it in an organized way, we can change policy. As you mentioned, it was the Clinton administration that forced through NAFTA. But, you know, in the presidential campaign this year, people were madder than the devil over what trade policy has done to people, so that this question of new trade policy became not just the property of one presidential candidate, but there was kind of a one-upmanship on who could better verbalize the need to change trade policy in the direction of working people, and that's what we intend to do with policies toward retirees. We face a massive depression if we don't find ways to change this. I think, maybe in closing or near closing, the thing that I think should be an outrage to everyone is that the criminals at Bear Stearns and every one of these big corporations that take our money, that put in place thievery in place of mortgage plans, get bailed out, but the working people that produced everything are supposed to go home and just die when they steal our entire pensions and our entire health care. Well, we don't intend to do that. But I would say one other thing. Even though for myself as well, you know, pensions were not an issue until right before you get there. But I would say this, for younger workers, this is a real issue. If older workers, when we go into McDonald's and older workers are serving us our burgers, that's telling us that older workers are going to be in the workforce much, much longer, and there are less jobs for younger workers. It means greater harm to workers health-wise, and less chance for workers to start early and develop their own ability to provide for their family.
Bruce, you're working with the Association of say the organization's title again, please.
The Alliance for Alliance of Alliance for working, doggone it, Alliance of Retired Americans.
There we go.
And we just developed a website, Norm Ornette, who's...
That was going to be my next question.
Who's the statewide organizer for Alliance of Retired Americans in Ohio, developed it along with some friends.
And the
it's
website
a fine
is?
Piece. It's www.OhioRetiredAmericans.org. www.AllianceOfRetiredAmericans.org. And we're part of coalitions fighting for peace and for prosperity for all working folks.
Well, there you go. That's about all the time we've got for Talk of the Town this week. Again, Dano will be back with us in his regular time slot next week. Thanks again to Dano for all his community service at the Community Festival. So you heard the contact info for the Alliance for Retired Americans, and the station's contact info, once again, is by phone, 447-0296, and on the web, that's wcrsfm.org, wcrsfm.org. I'm Evan Davis. I've been filling in for Dano, and you can catch my show, This Day in History, every weekday at about 7:58, right before we go off the air. See you next week, folks.